Hope is not merely a feeling, but it's a mindset. And that's what we're talking today. Good morning. It's Rochester Speaks. I'm John Caring, joined today by Hope 585's Executive Director, Ashley Cross. Ashley, good morning. Thanks for stopping by. Love what you're doing over at Hope 585. But for those who aren't familiar, let's talk a little bit about it. What do you guys do over there?
Yeah, well, first, thank you for having me. And Hope 585, we are a relationship-centered community for marginalized youth and their families. We really work with system-impacted youth and families, and we have a few different programs and services for young people and the family members who are connected with child welfare.
Yeah. When you say system impacted, so what kinds of children are we talking about?
Yeah, mostly we're talking about children who are in the foster care system, preparing to age out of the foster care system. Maybe them or their families are currently under an investigation for sometimes allegations of abuse, neglect, maltreatment. Yeah. And so those are majority of the families that we work with. So when we talk about the vulnerable population, we really believe that system impacted families are the most vulnerable. They're vulnerable to and at risk of separation. Which is harmful for so many different reasons. So we really work to help keep families intact, keep them together, while ensuring that children are safe and have the relationship and that they need to thrive.
And why does it seem like our society, I don't know if it's just me, but it seems like our society just tosses a lot of these children aside sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem always starts off with how the children come to the attention of child welfare in the first place. Which is typically poverty, right? Mm-hmm. Many of the kids who are in foster care or are maybe even being investigated, it usually the root causes are those that are really deeply rooted in poverty. And so we have a lot of children and family and many families who have a hard time providing some of the basic needs for their children, food, clothing, shelter. We have children who have immense amount of, different mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. And so when you're talking about a city or a society that already has so many issues pertaining to racism, systemic oppression, as well as poverty, then typically the result of that is family separation. Mm-hmm. And so I think that sometimes we would rather deal with the symptoms instead of the root causes, right? And so children in foster care, typically the real issue was that they were not protected in their homes. They were not, their parents were not given the resources they need so that their families could have stayed intact.
That's the key, is the symptoms versus the root causes, right?
Yeah.
When we're so focused on the symptoms, it just keeps happening. So yeah. What you do at Hope 585, you've been doing it for how long? When were you started?
We started back in 2018, okay. Launched our very first initiative in 2019.
Okay.
Called the Care Portal, and that was in partnership with the Department of Human Services. So for about 6 years, we have been running this partnership. We have an online technology. It's a technology that's on cell phones. And what we do is CPS workers, when they're going out to investigate a family or maybe remove a child from one foster home and place them in another foster home, they have access to our Care Portal. So they can put in the needs of those families and really help us narrow the front door to child welfare, right? Children get to stay at home because this technology is helping for child welfare families or child welfare agencies to say, hey, these are some of the needs that we're seeing in some of these families, right? And then those needs shoot out to about 600 community responders that we have recruited by way of community organizations and churches. And those responders are put in contact with the families. And so it's a beautiful way to not only get needs met, but also make connections. Right. Mm-hmm. Because the person who maybe is going to a specific church, they're dropping off a bed and they're able to meet with that mom and see what other needs that mother may have. Mm-hmm. So that's how we started. And from there, we've really just grown this beautiful community of people who really care about children and families, as well as, you know, it's really strengthening a lot of partners with some pretty amazing organizations that are doing similar work.
Mm-hmm. So how was Hope 585 started?
So I started Hope 585 again back in 2018 after yep. moving here from Tulsa. So I lived okay. in Tulsa for about 10 years and started a professional foster home there. So I was actually a foster parent to, over the span of 4 years, about 20 teenage girls wow. that were preparing to age out of the foster care system. So when I moved here in Rochester, the first thing I started was the Care Portal, and then that quickly grew into a mentorship program for kids aging out of the foster care system. 2 years ago, we started the first professional foster home here in Monroe County. So we actually have a home that houses young ladies, anywhere from 4 to 6 girls at a time who are preparing to age out of the foster care system. And the reason we started that home is because there's a lot of young people. You know, you hear a lot about the school to prison pipeline, but you don't hear a lot about the foster care to prison pipeline, right? And I was reading a study recently, and it said that foster care is the highway to homelessness, right? And so we have so many really negative and not positive outcomes at all associated with kids growing up in the system. And so Hope 585, we decided that we really believe that impactful work is, you know, creating these excellent services and programs for kids that are already impacted. But we really believe that true impact would be keeping kids home, right? Because the research shows that kids are way better off when they grow up in their communities with their families. And we also realize that that's not always the case, right? It's not always possible because of abuse and because of, you know, maltreatment. But we do really do believe that most of that is deeply rooted in poverty and systemic racism.
I can't imagine that transition right at the end of your aging out of foster care, because many of us, we, you know, having grown up in very privileged home, we're 22, we're 23. If things don't go well for us, even if we've moved out, we got that parent's basement to slide back into.
It's
got to be such a challenge when you're such a huge transition period in someone's life when they're already dealing with so much in life at that age. So talk a little bit about that difficult transition.
You hit it right on the head. Like, I remember turning 18 and my mom driving me to college, and I was nervous and I was scared, and I called her dozens of times throughout the first week, right? And just to believe that there are, you know, dozens of kids here in Monroe County, you know, thousands nationally that are aging out of foster care. And the data shows that they go typically between three places: prison, incarceration, homelessness. Prison, homelessness, and human trafficking, right? So when we're talking about, like, where majority of these vulnerable children go, they don't just go away. They don't just age out and go to college, right? Less than 50% of kids in foster care go to college, and then about 3% of them actually graduate from college, right? And then most of them, you know, 30% or a little bit more than 30% are living at poverty line. And so the data is really clear that children aging out of the foster care system are not transitioning into healthy adulthood.
I could totally see that. I mean, when I was 18, are you kidding me? If I didn't have parents to support me and drive me back and forth from college, I would have dropped out too.
Like, and it's not because they don't want it.
Exactly.
Right? That's the thing. It's not that these kids don't want to go to college. It's not that they don't want to have careers and jobs. It's that they have experience nothing more than instability. Like, we had one young lady, she was actually our keynote speaker last year for our fundraiser. She's 21 years old, came into the foster care system when she was two. So between the age of 2 and 21, she's moved over 100 times. Right? Like, and then we expect for her to turn 21 and then go get a job, keep that job, be a tax-paying citizen, be responsible. And those are all the things that she desires to be, but nobody's modeled that for her. And so, again, the research is very clear about that one trusting, safe adult. It can change the trajectory of a young person's life. And I think if most of us are honest with ourselves, you know, those of us who maybe think that we're stable and successful, it really roots down to being one person that cheered us on. Right? Like, one person that protected us, one person that kept us safe, one person that opened a door for us that we would not have been able to open ourselves. And these kids who are in care don't have that, right? They're moved from foster home to foster home, from group home to group home, you know, and from residential facility to residential facility. And most kids growing up in foster care, they move at least 8 times.
We don't really know that they're here either, because we don't usually hang out with in those kinds of circles, right?
I always say they're sometimes the invisible population. They're in the classrooms, and educators might not know unless the young person says it, right? But imagine trying to teach algebra to a kid who was just removed from their home the night before. And they're too ashamed to say something, but it's going to show up in their behavior.
So how many there are here locally?
So last year's data showed a little bit less than 400 kids in the foster care system here in Monroe County. And then if we look at how many are aging out each year, every year we provide Hope 585, we do cash assistance for every single young person in Monroe County aging out of the foster care system. And we usually see anywhere from 15 to 20 of those young people. And so the numbers are, they're high, right? I think 400 kids is a lot. But also, it's not that much, right? So I that's why I say I think that we can impact the lives of every single kid in the foster care system and every single kid aging out, because we're not talking about thousands of kids.
Right?
We're talking about a couple hundred kids who deserve the community to wrap around them and to show up for them in ways in which they haven't seen adults show up for them before. And again, these are kids who were separated from their families and from their communities, which means that they were also separated from their source of identity.
Yeah, yeah, right? That's true. And so you have monetary resources are needed, definitely.
Yeah.
But then also, how bad of a need is there for foster parents as well and mm-hmm. adults to be positive influences in
their absolutely.
Lives?
I mean, there's always a shortage of foster parents.
Yeah.
There's always a shortage of foster parents. And I think that I would be safe to say this is nationally. There's always a shortage of foster parents for teenagers. Yeah. Right? Because if you sign up to be a foster parent, you want the babies.
Right.
Everybody wants the babies. Right. And nobody wants the teenager who's 16 that's running away now, right?
Mm-hmm.
That has difficulty in school. Nobody is signing up to run and provide, you know, safety and stability for those kids. But those are the ones who need us the most, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that there's something about people they feel more good about themselves saving the babies, right?
Yeah.
But I think the challenge for me is, you know, I think these kids needed saving way before they were in the foster care system, right? And I think a part of that saving would have been to really get to the root cause and figure out how we could have kept them at home, right? That's what most of these kids needed. That's what many of them deserved. And our system is just not set up to do that. I do know that here in Monroe County and nationally, child welfare agencies are putting more of an emphasis on keeping children at home. And when they can't keep them at home, trying to find next of kin or kinship, you know, so those are the relatives. And that's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
But it's still just, we still have so much work to do.
Yeah. Do you think it's possible to get all of these kids back into their homes or at least in a situation like that?
I want to say I believe it's possible. Mm-hmm. I think that will mean that our leaders, our political leaders, our government, and our communities would have to prioritize families in a way that really showed that we prioritize families, and that starts with budgets and showing up, right, and investing in real prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Most families can't get the help that they need unless they're already involved in the system, and that's not true prevention.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Prevention is like giving people what they need before there's a CPS worker knocking on their door to investigate them.
That's treating symptoms.
It
not
is.
Addressing
That's exactly
the root
what
cause.
It is. That's like, we heard there's a problem and now we're here to investigate the problem. And I heard a child welfare worker say just this Saturday, we run a panel together, that investigations are traumatizing for families.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
You know, just imagine being at the lowest moment of your life. You don't have the thing. You know you don't have the resources to meet your children's needs. It's everything in you wants to do that. And then you're investigated for issues related to poverty.
Yeah.
Right? It's traumatizing.
Yeah, but Hope 585 stepping in and doing some great work. So you talked
Absolutely.
About the financial assistance.
Yeah.
What else are you doing in our Rochester community to help these kids?
Yeah, we have a mentorship program for kids that are preparing to age out of the foster care system and other youth that are in the city that maybe have experienced some crisis. And so right now, we are recruiting more mentors. We need more mentors to show up for these young people. I'm a mentor. I have a young man that I've been walking with me, my husband and my mother, for over a year now. So I'm telling people, like, it's really nothing for us to figure out how we can just fit one young person into our life, into our circle, into our social network, to really wrap around. And so we're always looking for mentors. For young people that are in the foster care system. We're also looking for people who can help us with some of our curriculum stuff. So every other Friday, we bring these kids together at Hope 585 and we teach them life skills, right? Because we want to make sure that they have the relationships that they need as they're preparing to transition, but also the skills.
Yeah.
Right. And a part of that is like, do you know how to budget? Do you know how to do an interview? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then civic engagement. Like, do you know, like, that you also are a valuable member in your community and it's your responsibility to take care of your community as well. So we work that as well. And then on our parent side, we have, again, we have the cash assistance program for young people aging out of the foster care system. But we also do cash assistance for families working towards reunification.
Mm-hmm.
Because we understand that sometimes it's just a few things that are really getting in the way of a family being put back together.
Yeah.
And so those are some of the things that we're doing. And then, like I said, we have our foster home, which a lot of people just really, it's the first professional foster home here in Monroe County. And so We have four young ladies who are living in that home with a full-time foster parent. They're working our Hope Rising curriculum. They're learning how to drive. They're going to school. They have their mentors. And they're really wrapped around a community that's preparing them for adulthood.
Couple of huge things that you said there, and I just think about yesterday calling up my dad because I couldn't get my lawnmower to start, you know, like little things like that. You turn 18 even a few years after that and you're like, well, good thing I still got my dad.
Listen,
right?
But I'm far past 18 and I still call my mom. Okay.
I bet, yeah.
Like a few times a week. I mean, there's nothing like, you know, having that connection with your parents or another trusted adult that you know you can call at any given moment. Sometimes with things that feel like they're just the dumbest question, right? Mm-hmm. It's like having that safety net is so important.
And mentorship. You talked about that. And I don't know if it's a time thing or it's just not knowing that these opportunities exist. But I think a lot of people are a little bit shy about that. And maybe they don't feel adequate enough to step up and be a mentor. Well, what do I have? I've screwed up so many times too. What do I have to share with these people? First of all, how rewarding is it for you, not only for the young man that you mentor, but for you and your family to be part of that?
Yeah, you know, there's something about entering into a relationship with someone who's different than you.
Mm-hmm.
Who has a different experience. We always say when we're entering into a relationship with these young people, like they're our teachers as well, mm-hmm. right? Like this is not this hierarchy, like we're the adults and we're coming in to teach them everything that they need to know. This is really like a peer-to-peer model. Like these, we have more experience, but they have more experience in certain areas. And there's a lot to learn from young people if we would just stop and invest in them and listen. They can tell us what they need. They could tell us what's happened to them. And, you know, they can be sources of hope for us as well. So I think it's incredibly rewarding. You know, I think there's something inherently just scary about teenagers. Like, they're just scary, right? Like, it's like, I don't know about these teenagers.
They
like, are they going to like me? Am I cool enough? Yep. Am I going to be able to navigate this conversation? They're going to get in the car, and then they're going to be on their phones.
They're going to say words I've never heard.
They're going to say words that I'm going to say something that sounds really goofy. Like, teenagers are already just scary, whether they've experienced trauma histories or not. Like, they're scary, right? And so, again, I think that it's a beautiful place for adults to be able to say, you know what? Although we don't have a lot in common right now, and, you know, right now all these narratives around children being lost and all this stuff, it's just not true, right? These young people want mentors. They want people to show up for them. And so I think it's incredibly rewarding. At Hope 585, we actually do a group mentorship approach. And so because we realize that, one, young people need more than sometimes one trusted adult, and we also want diverse experiences. And so that's why it's like I said, it's me, my mom, and my husband. All three of us are very different in how we deal with our mentee. And so we ask for people to come with groups of maybe 2 to 3, and you wrap around that young person. And it also creates a supportive network for the mentors. Right? Because there's been times where I'm like, I'm looking at my husband, I'm like, I don't know how to navigate this conversation with him. And he's like, I'll tap in. Like, I'll take him out to eat and we'll have a man-to-man talk next week.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then my mom is a little bit older, more nurturing. She brings kind of like the grandma feel.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and so it feels like family.
That is a family.
Right?
It's a community, too.
Yeah.
They say the community can raise children, right? And that's...
Right. And when you take that approach, it also makes it feel less like another obligation. Right, because I tell people there's people that you already inherently do life with. Mm-hmm. There's people that you see weekly. You see them monthly. And so if you were to mentor with those people, then you're just going to bring that young person into that circle once a month.
Yes.
Right. And so if you're already doing family dinner once a month, you're just bringing them in once a month. Right. If you're already getting together with your sorority, your fraternity every Saturday, you guys are going to just take one Saturday a month and dedicate it to that young person. And so that way it feels like less of an obligation and it's more like, hey, we're just bringing this young person into our world that already exists and really trying to help triple their social capital.
Mm-hmm. And that's a powerful thing and not as intimidating as it might sound off the bat.
Right.
So mentorship, a big thing that you do.
Yeah.
Also, everything surrounding all of your branding, it's all about hope.
Yeah.
And I love this because this is ultimately... what you're doing this for, right?
Yeah.
Tell me what hope means to you and what kind of hope you provide for these children.
Yeah, I have been studying what's called the science of hope or the hope theory for almost 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And I love it because it's so simple, yet so profound, right? And hope is just the belief that your future can be better and brighter than your past and that you have the power to make it better. And everything that we do at Hope 585, our goal is to increase hope. Right? We can find housing for a young person. We can give them cash assistance. We can match them with mentors. We can help families be reunited. But if we don't increase their hope, if we don't increase their belief that their future can be better than their past and that they have the power to make it better, then not if, but when adversity comes, everything's going to crumble again.
Yeah.
Right? And so people who have this belief system that I have power over my life, and there can be adversity, there can be challenges, there can be all these different things that happen in the community, in my home. And at the end of the day, I still have power, mm-hmm. right? And that comes from typically community, mm-hmm. right? Your community increases your hope. And so we always say that hope is a social gift. Everything that we do, we want for it to make people feel like they belong, like they're a part of something bigger than themselves. But also that their role that they play in this larger vision of life, like that it's valuable. And so that's what we're doing. Like we measure hope. There's a hope scale. We measure hope. So all of our staff and even myself, like we take our hope scale. Like we know when our hope is getting low, that means I might need a wellness day. I might need to connect with people who are a part of my community. But that's what we want. We want for youth and families when they walk into the doors of Hope 585 and they walk out for them to say, okay, everything might not be perfect. My life might not be all together, but I really believe that my future can be brighter and better than my past. And now I know that I have the power to make it better. Mm-hmm. If we can do that, then they're going to be successful.
Hope585.org. We're talking with Ashley Cross, who's the executive director over at Hope 585. And finally, Ashley, you do this definitely for a reason, because you poured so much of yourself into this in Tulsa here. Yeah. You have this wonderful hat on that says, be a good person.
Yeah.
Is that why you're doing what you're doing, or are there other motivations behind it? Because clearly you are being a good person.
Yeah, you know, I do believe that being a good person is like the bare minimum that we can do. Like just be good, just be kind to people, right? For me, it's a little deeper. You know, everything that I do is really rooted in my faith. You know, I am, you know, a Christian. I love Jesus, and everything that I do for me is really trying to my hardest to model, you know, what I believe that if Jesus was here, that he would be doing for people. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that would be like, he would be speaking life into them. He would be making sure that they know that they're seen and that they're valuable. And that they're part of something bigger than themselves, you know. So for me, it's more than just being a good person. But for me, I have a good person, you know, it's Jesus for me. And that's who I look to as my example of a good person. Everybody has their own good person that they're hopefully modeling. But I think that everybody needs to find a good person to model, you know, kindness, empathy, you know, love and hope for others.
Hope585.org, and what are the best ways to get involved, become a mentor, to contribute in any way that people can?
Yeah, I always ask for people to just stop by Hope585. We have, on the third Wednesday of every single month, we do a free luncheon. It's a lunch and learn. We typically have a Chick-fil-A or you know, Jersey Mike's, and you can meet with the staff. You can hear more than just me talk. I try not to actually talk too much and let my staff and some of our youth who have testimonial videos. But you get to hear about all the programs and really connect with the staff that might be directly supervising the program that you're interested in. So I always tell people, start off with signing up for a vision tour. They're free. We feed you. If nothing else, you walk away full and with a whole lot of knowledge around what we do. So visiting the website, signing up for a vision tour, I think is the first step.
All of that information, again, up at hope585.org. Ashley Cross, the executive director over at Hope585. You're helping young people have hope, helping them heal, helping them thrive. And that's what we need now more than ever. Thank you so much for all you do. And thank you for stopping by this morning.
Thanks for having me.